Senator Rick Jones, Republican from Grand Ledge, a chair of the Judiciary Committee. Good evening, sir. How are you?
Great. What a beautiful day in Lansing. Nice.
Wasn't it something? I'm telling you, I say it often on the show, we're so easy in Michigan, a sunny day, and it just changes everything for us, doesn't it?
It sure does.
It does. What a busy day at the Capitol today. Budgets passing out of conference committee and passing out of on the floor and so forth. A lot of things happening. We had Department of Human Services budget pass go through. Tell me what your take on some of the activity today, sir.
Well, I think half the budgets have gone through. There'll be more tomorrow. Perhaps. Finishing up next week. The goal is to have everything done by the 31st, and it looks like that goal is easily reachable.
And we've talked about this before. When we first heard that in January, we all kind of took a look back in a gasp and said, that can never happen.
Yes, and it's a monumental change. I don't think it's happened for 40 years. And, you know, it's important to the schools because they need to know how much money they have before July 1. Their budget is due July 1.
So, this helps dramatically in knowing exactly what they have to do as well when they know what they're getting from the state.
Yes, exactly. And I have opposed the education budgets because I don't agree with the transfer of school aid money to universities. And I think that we should have kept more into K-12, but that was my personal vote, and it did pass.
Well, and you joined a lot of Democrats on that one issue, that's for sure.
Well, you know, I listen to my constituents every day, and the vast majority of them wanted the Michigan business tax fixed. We did do that. However, they didn't want K-12 to be drastically cut. And, you know, I listen to my constituents, and that's the way I voted.
Well, and that's why they continue to put you there and trust you, sir. In the higher ed budget, my understanding is that passed out today. Is that correct?
That is correct.
And some of the cuts went through on that. My understanding is the 15% cut went through, but some of the other things didn't go through on that, such as the penalty for partner benefits. Do I have good information?
It's my understanding that was taken out, yes.
But there's still some language in there in regard to partner benefits and also the issue of stem cells. Universities reporting on stem cells, that wasn't removed, but the language was changed a little bit. That's my understanding.
Yes, I think that's accurate. It was a simple reporting of stem cell activity by universities. And the purpose of that is just to make sure people aren't cloning babies and experimenting and everything is done above board.
And that's done in other areas as well. It's not simply that area, and I think that's important. I read an article about that, and I think that's important to know. There's reporting on that kind of research at universities in other areas.
Yes, I don't think that's a drastic thing.
I'm glad to get that clarified with you. Department of Corrections budget, some of that went through today as well, and I'm curious on your take on some of that, given your background in law enforcement, the state police budget, corrections budget, and military and veterans affairs are also in the process.
Well, you know, the Michigan Department of Corrections takes a huge chunk of the Michigan budget, and I think it's important that we carefully pare it back in areas where we can. You know, we simply don't want to open the doors and release people. That's been done in the past. But if there's anything we can safely do, cutting the budgets are very important because the money's needed other places in Michigan, like education, roads, and public safety.
Do you think some of the cuts made to the Department of Corrections are appropriate given the circumstances economically?
I think they're very reasonable. And I know there's a new director over there now, and I think he'll be able to handle it, do a great job.
Very good. I wanted to talk to you about a couple of other issues. You've talked a long time about bridge cards and reform on bridge cards. And just this week, a John Schneider column about a gentleman going shopping and buying lobster and Mountain Dew. I mean, lobster, steak, and Mountain Dew sounds like quite a feast. I'm not sure I'd pair it with Mountain Dew, but I'm also sure I wouldn't use a bridge card to buy that stuff.
Well, you know, it's pretty shocking. About a month ago, I had a call from a DHS worker who says, I see that you're working to ban bridge cards from working in the casino ATMs. This, yes, I've got a bill that's gone through the Senate. Hopefully, it'll soon be through the House, and the bridge cards won't work in those ATMs. People won't be tempted. And we had one casino took in $87,000, just one casino from bridge cards. Well, then DHS worker called me and said, Rick, you aren't going to believe it. We are issuing bridge cards to people with huge amounts of money because federal guidelines say that we cannot consider liquid assets. And she said to me, I've actually given bridge cards out to people with $100,000 in the bank, even one person with $200,000, because it's all based on income. Well, then we had Mr. Leroy Fick in the media. It turned out that he won $2 million in the lottery and continues to use his bridge card. So it's obvious that the taxpayers are being cheated. We need to have the entire system revamped. And I have asked all four congressmen that are in my Senate district to assist our new director of DHS to fix this problem.
Well, and it's we keep uncovering more and more stories, and I think that's what is so disturbing. And I know the folks in the state of Michigan are awfully happy that you're taking a look at it and trying to make some corrections on this, for sure. Another crazy story that came up, you and I had just a moment to talk yesterday afternoon about a gentleman who took a child to a ball game, and then what ensued?
Well, you know, this gentleman is a University of Michigan professor, highly regarded man. He took his son to a Detroit baseball game, 7-year-old little Leo Ratte. And his dad, he said, Dad, I'm thirsty. He got him a lemonade, and he bought him a Mike's lemonade, which is hard, has alcohol in it. Of course, the professor had no idea. And the little boy was sitting there holding the lemonade, and the police saw him. He was taken away, put in a hospital. Hospital determined he had no alcohol in his system. He was given the protective services. They held him for 3 days, even though the mother came and said, you know, give me back my child. A terrible, traumatizing situation, and really not necessary. The child was never in any danger. And looking into the situation, I've discovered that, you know, we have probably the lowest standards in the country for a state for taking away children from parents. And because of those, a lack of standards, we can either have a child taken away inappropriately, or we can have a child in need ignored. And so what my legislation seeks to do is basically there's four parts. There'll be standards for emergency police removal, a process for judicial emergency placement, a standard for court-ordered emergency removals, and the preliminary hearing to make sure everybody's rights are protected. And basically, let's have some standards in our state and be sure that we're constitutional, because there is doubt that we currently meet U.S. constitutional standards as were defined by Circuit Court of Appeal.
Well, and everybody can appreciate the fact that folks are looking out for a youngster anywhere. But there's also times when it's run amok, and it sounds like this just went way too far, obviously, and as you said, cause undue stress, strain, and trauma on everybody involved.
Absolutely. The child should be in imminent danger and be, you know, immediately threatened with harm. There should be some reasons to take the child from a parent.
Well, it as always, you're also looking into, we just have a couple minutes left, but looking into dog fighting. Gosh, you know, there's always something for you to go after, unfortunately.
Well, you know, as chair of judiciary, I deal with criminal and civil law. That is my job. You know, I work on a lot of things other than budgets. And, you know, we don't have a really good law in Michigan for going after the people that put dogs into dog fighting. And so we're going to strengthen that law. It's a three-bill package. It's bipartisan, Democrats and Republicans working together to ensure that people that engage in dog fighting are treated quite severely. You know, their property should be taken away. You know, the facility where they're doing this sort of activity, and the punishment should be severe enough that it stops. We don't want Michigan to become a dogfighting capital.
Absolutely. Well, sir, as always, appreciate your time and your perspective on the issue so very much. Thank you for your time today and look forward to our next conversation.
Okay.